Sherry, what issues have kept you from participating in things that you know you should participate in?
Okay, how much time do you have, Amy? The two that come to mind actually tend to go together. One of them is my fear of having to make small talk. Like, I can talk forever, as you know, that talking is not my issue, but I don't have social graces. And so when I'm in a situation where I'm supposed to be able to happily talk about the weather, it just makes me so anxious, is probably the best word. I just feel so inept. And then you put me in a situation where I might compensate for that by, oh, look, there's a buffet. There's food. I'll put food in my mouth to make myself feel less socially awkward. Well, that's just not a good combination for someone with a history of an eating disorder. So it is the easiest choice for me when invited to something where I don't know people and there's going to be a ton of food. The easiest thing for me to do is just say no. And it's the comfortable choice, but it's not the best choice. So, how about you? What are your issues that keep you from participating in things that you know you really ought to?
Well, I'd say that there are two things. One is I don't like to do anything in front of people that I'm not already good at. I'm battling that. I'm battling that. And then the other one is that I have lived in a Christian bubble, just to be real honest. I often am uncomfortable around people who aren't Christians. And that is just the saddest admission ever. And again, I'm battling that as well. But it's just true that I'm more comfortable around, I guess most of us are, but people who think like us, that I know that there's not going to be any confrontation. But I have two big regrets from my college years because I really hid in that Christian bubble in a church that I was in. And there were two things that I really wanted to do that I didn't do because I wasn't good at them and I was afraid to try,
Do tell.
or I wasn't necessarily good at them. And I knew there would be people that weren't Christians and didn't think like me there. And it was the fencing team. Yes, I took fencing as one of my PEs and I loved it. I don't know that I would have even made it if I had tried out, but I never even tried out because of those two things. And then the choir. I love to sing. I'm not a soloist, but I love to sing in a choir. And I wish I had done those two things in college, but I didn't. I let those issues of mine hold me back.
I've heard psychologists say that regret is one of the most powerful emotions that we have. We don't regret what we did do so much as we regret what we didn't do. And issues, we all have issues that hold us back.
Yes, one of our listeners said almost exactly that. She said, I want to do so many things for my Lord and our church, but I'm dealing with a lot of emotional issues from a difficult childhood. I don't want anyone to know about that. So I often don't participate in things because I'm struggling with these issues. And when I do something, I want it to be perfect at home, at work, everywhere. I never feel like I can relax or let my guard down. I know these things, and yet I can't seem to change them. It really makes me feel awful.
I get that. I get what it's like to have this inner struggle with a challenging issue that keeps us from taking outer action, even when we know that obedience to God's call is part of what's going to heal those issues for us.
Absolutely. And I don't know that there's any bigger issue in our country today than race. And so our guest today, Lucretia, is going to help us learn how to deal with the issues around race so we can move forward.
Well, this is Sherry Gregory.
And I'm Amy Carroll.
And you're listening to Grit and Grace, Good Girls Breaking Bad Rules, the podcast that equips you to lose who you're not, love who you are, and live your one life well.
Today, we're talking to Lucretia Berry. Lucretia's an anti-racist consultant and educator, the author and facilitator of What Lies Between Us, Journal and Guide, and loves to create offerings and content to help folks, especially parents and teachers, overcome race with grace. She received her PhD in education, curriculum, and instruction from Iowa State University. Nathan and Lucretia have three little girls who are the inspiration for their work through Brownicity.
I love that. Overcome race with grace fits
Yes.
right on in.
Lucretia, what led you to write What Lies Between Us?
First, I'll say that my background is in curriculum and instruction. So I have to put that over to the side because that'll make sense soon here. And essentially, I'm fortunate to be in a community and in a church that is very multi-ethnic. My friends would say, okay, so we're living our lives together, but there's still so many issues that are happening around race and racism, and we don't have the tools and the language to be able to explain some things. Or even, I think some of the things that stood out were, okay, I love my mom and she's wonderful, but she has some things all wrong and I don't know how to help her. I can't articulate, you know, why her thinking is not helpful, or how should I talk to my children about this? And so those are the kind of questions my husband and I would get all the time. And so, you know, we were in spaces, we were in like safe spaces where people had beautiful hearts and great intentions, but just had no framework or language or the education about race and the history. So I, again, with a background in curriculum and instruction, I had kind of for years carried around a curriculum in my back pocket. And so, yeah, I just kind of pulled together a class like for my friends, be kind of driven by their questions and of course informed by my knowledge, because I do have quite a bit of knowledge and work in like multicultural education and anti-racist education and diversity in K-12 schools and so many things that, and I've just kind of been exposed to this for years and years, kind of consciously doing the work, but not really intentionally the way that I am now, just kind of casually. So I just pulled together a curriculum that I thought would be helpful. And I wanted to deliver it in a way like I would want to go to that class, because I had been to many, many, many like workshops, seminars, sessions. And I thought, why would you do it this way? It's already a tough topic. It's already challenging for people. Why is this your method, you know? So I wanted to design a class that, yeah, that I would approve of.
Well, I love that. And I just want to affirm that and tell our listeners how I came across to you, because there's a team at Proverbs 31 that's going through What Lies Between Us. And it is an amazing curriculum. And so we are using it in conjunction with your website, which is called Brownicity. And before I dive into the rest of it, I love the way your name came about for Brownicity. And so tell us what that means.
So Brownicity is, of course, made up. It's two words put together, brown, and I'll get to that, and ethnicity. And ethnicity means that which we have in common. So my husband is white. I am black. We knew that having children, there would be conversations that we'd have to have, because we wanted to know who they are, like to know who they really are, and how society would see them as a multi-ethnic person, but also how God created them. And we knew that in order to do that, that, you know, we'd have to have these very intentional conversations with them from really early age. So we kind of looked for, you know, we knew we weren't going to teach them like color blindness or kind of the black white binary as if it were, you know, a true thing. And they were somehow this mixed thing. They came out like, no, we're not teaching them that. So we just kind of looked for like language and verbiage and a framework that spoke more to the oneness of humanity. And my four-year-old at the time came home from preschool and she had done a portrait of herself. I think they had done the activity, The Colors of Us by Karen Katz. And so, you know, that character learns that she and all of her friends in her community are shades of brown. And she goes to the community and given, and her mom is teaching her how to mix all the hues of brown to make different skin tones. And so my daughter came home and she said, Mommy, we are all shades of brown. She said, you are dark brown and Daddy is light brown and I am medium brown. And I was like, yes, exactly. Like and we'd been searching for like kid words to describe this, the concept of many hues. As humanity, we are many hues, but one humanity. And so even in our family, we would use the term, we would describe people very specifically, like brown like Daddy, brown like Mommy, you know, brown like you, when we were describing people, you know, with straight hair, curly hair, wavy hair, not just in like these racial categories, because racial categories don't really make sense to children. So That's where the brown comes from in brownicity, because we would say, you know, brown like you, brown like me, brown like so-and-so. And so brownicity. So we are all hues of brown. We are many hues, but one humanity. And so that's where brownicity came from.
So beautiful. I love it. I love it. I was confused by the title at first. And then when I heard your TED talk, which is fantastic, I was like, oh, that's it. I love that story.
I know.
So one of the resources that you have on brownicity.com is that you have this chart that shows the difference between debate, discussion, and dialogue. And our group started with this, and it has rocked my world. So first, before I dive into my issue here, Liz, I would love for you to just define in a nutshell, what's debate, what's discussion, and what's dialogue, and kind of what the difference is between them, because this is so key to discussions about race.
And I do want to say that I didn't come up with that. That is through the Intergroup Relations, Conflict, and Community from the University of Michigan. So shout out. But I loved it because a huge problem with race conversations is, yeah, we don't know how to have them. We haven't been taught how to have them. And we think that it is a conversation that is that we want to debate about, or, you know, we want to have these discussions. And I like what I heard John Powell use this analogy. He said, you know, everyone, let's just say everyone in the room, everyone listening has heard or knows something about gravity. And I'm like, yes, yes. But how many people can actually explain how gravity works? Okay, so just like race, like everyone has heard about it, something about it. Maybe you've talked about it, maybe thought about it, maybe you've been told not to talk about it. But how many, not many people, I should say, in the popular population, can explain how race has worked and how race works? And many times people don't know what it is. So then even as people are debating, it's like you're going back and forth about what gravity actually is, but you don't know actually how gravity works. And the many times, like, we've done so many classes, and honestly, I think only a couple of times in one class, it was a huge class, one person raised their hand and that he could explain how gravity works, well, because he was some kind of, you know, physicist, scientist person. I was in a college town of an engineering college. So of course, few people raise their hands. And so, you know, debating comes with this approach that, you know, there is a wrong, there is a right. Mm-hmm. And so the people involved are out to win. Like, it's some kind of competition and people are out to win. I like, in quotation marks, it said, might is right, because debating is about fighting and winning. Mm-hmm. And that is not how you're going to have any kind of fruitful or life-giving conversation around race. And then there's discussion. And I like the quotation there. It says, the noisier, the smarter. And so in discussions, this is, they assume that, and that there's an equal playing field even. So it's like, let's have this discussion. Well, and again, I've been to a lot of discussions around race. And yeah, they don't go well because not everyone has like an understanding. Some people are coming from, actually, I point this out in the What Lies Between Us curriculum, that typically the conversation goes south because people are coming from either of these four perspectives. The colorblind approach. So you've been taught your whole life, you know, to be colorblind. So you have no language or framework to talk about race, but you want to have a discussion. Like, that's just not healthy, you know? Mm-hmm. Or from a selectively skewed history. So maybe you've only been taught a European-centered education about the history of our country. So you only know conquest, colonization, and contributions of Europeans. So you don't know, there's so many other things that kind of have been left out of your understanding of, you know, how we got where we are. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have this single story. Again, you want to have a discussion, but there's not an equal playing field. Okay, number three, I have human interest stories, racially incited personal experiences and catastrophic events headlining the news are often shared with no racial or historical context. So you see something on the news, or maybe something happened to like this one person you know, And then you want to base your whole ideology around race on one story. Again, not an equal playing field for having a discussion. And then number four is the worst of all. And this approach to bring to the table is political platforms. And so many people, their only reference for having a conversation about race is kind of spawned from a political platform, but they don't know that. And I've had people even tell me, I'm not political. And then everything they tell me sounds like, you just read that from the whatever conservative or liberal or whatever. You just read that from the manual or whatever. Like, they didn't really, but they don't know that. No, you really don't understand how race works. And so then the conversation goes south. So discussion, the noisier, the smarter. And oftentimes people are having a discussion. And then there's dialogue and connectivity for community. So you are working towards a goal. You're working towards a common goal. So even with the curriculum that I created, it is very dialogue focused because the common goal is to be educated about race, the history and the context and racism. So we can all agree that we need education in that area. So you come to our classes, and that is the goal. The goal is not to express that you aren't a racist. Like, okay, good for you. But we still have work to do. And sometimes people come with that goal, or people say, you know, they want to have like racial dialogue. Well, I want to become friends with a person of color, or that's not why we're here. And you don't have to have a friend that is a person of color to actually get this and want to get this and understand this. Like, understanding how race and racism works will help you as an individual, like, be a better person. You know, that's our common goal. And that's what we're all working towards, is to get this education. And so the way that the whole course is set up, it's like, you don't even talk to each other until you've had at least 3 or 4 weeks of education. And so that's where a lot of the things come in, where you're, you know, watching the documentary or reading certain articles, because we need to make sure that everybody kind of has a common understanding before we actually engage in talking to each other. And it makes all the difference in the world.
Well, and for me, one of the things, the whole dialogue thing has really rocked me, because I really started to realize when you get these vocabulary words, because language is so powerful,
that's right,
you start to realize the gaps in yourself. And for me, the gap for me in dialogue was, I'm a terrible listener, because I'm a reforming perfectionist, and perfectionists have these really strong ideas of what's right. And I put that in quotation marks. And so we have this idea about what's right. And so as reforming perfectionists, we almost always default to debate, because we're trying to convince someone else that we are right. So Lucretia, tell us, like, what are some steps that we can take to change from debaters to dialoguers? Because I love the idea of dialogue, because the whole goal of dialogue is that we walk together out of this into community. And neither debate nor discussion leads us into community, which I think is what we all long for. So how do we change? How do we go from debaters to dialogue?
Okay, so the first thing is to take on the posture of a student. Like, to say, I am a student, I am learning, to humble yourself, and then continue and, like, say, repeat. So, you know, keep doing that over and over and over. So yeah. Even though I am a facilitator, or I teach this, I continue to learn from the people on my team. Even as I go into the sessions and people want to share, I continue to learn. So always just take the posture of a student. And then you have to ask yourself, if you are a perfectionist, you know, you feel like you have to win, you have to ask yourself, okay, what is more important? Like, my pride, my ego, or the goal of walking together into community? And then so you'll just have to maybe over and over again make that sacrifice. But that's okay, because we've been empowered to sacrifice, right?
Lucretia, one of my biggest fears in this group is that my heart is to do it right, but so often I do it wrong. I say the wrong thing. I just did this in the last meeting. I said the wrong thing, and it was it was uncomfortable and it was painful and it made my heart hurt afterwards. Mm-hmm. So how can we get over the fear of doing it wrong so that we can move forward?
Yeah. And I think you just have to, that is so common. And that's another reason why I kind of set up the curriculum this way, because then you have more time to just be quiet, you know, and become comfortable with the
okay, so good. And that was the whole thing. That was my takeaway. Is I was talking when I should have kept my mouth shut and been listening. So ta-da, there we go. Anyway, thank you, Lucretia. Hurts so good.
Thank you for calling Amy on the carpet and telling her she needs to be quiet more. And I was here to wait. I just want to notice that I was quietly listening.
Yes, we need to be quiet more. And then just, of course, accept that. Like, okay, you got to think about, I often use the analogy that, okay, this conversation, we're at different, I say, grade levels. And oftentimes, like if you are white and you were taught to be colorblind, you are in preschool. Okay. And then most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time, people of color, because they've had to have the conversation, can be more like in high school or college, right? And I say that for everyone as a lens for us to view each other. So for example, if I am the teacher or I'm in college, I am going to look at a person in preschool with that lens, with a lens of grace, you know? And I'm like, she is in preschool and she is trying, she is learning her ABCs. And then bless the person in preschool, bless her heart, bless it good. Bless it good. And then a person who is in preschool has to, look, you can be in preschool about race, but then, you know, you can be in college or whatever in other topics, but you have to say, look, this topic, I'm in preschool. I'm going to make mistakes. I'm going to accidentally say the wrong thing. I'm going to hurt people, but I'm in preschool. And that's what we do in preschool, right? It's okay. It's okay. And that's why it's also very important to establish a safe space or a grace-filled space. And again, I have that as a part of the book too, because, you know, you want to know that you can just say whatever. I mean, not whatever. I mean, responsibly. Right. And if it was, you know, and it can actually be an accident and you are in a space lovingly can help you out. So I think that's just a part of it. And we just have to accept that, like, there's going to be mistakes. There's going to be, and, you know, and I'm a person, like, I will, you know, I will help someone out.
Well, and our listeners can't see us, but when Lucretia gave her answer just then, it was hard for me. Like, I got teary. I'm getting teary again and wanted to put my head down and cry because there was so much grace in that. Lucretia, thank you so much. I'm willing. I keep talking about God sending me back to kindergarten. He has been. And I am a preschooler. I mean, even above that in this, below that in this conversation. And so I just appreciate it. And it happened in our group this way, too, that there was so much grace for me, which I was very thankful for. But, you know, you just hate to be the one saying the stupid thing. So anyway, there you go.
Well, I think one of the hardest things about this is that, well, in every area of life, in order to learn and grow, we have to fail. But the price when we fail with people is so high, and sometimes it's unconscionably high, and doing huge damage out of ignorance is just that's why I've excused doing nothing, and yet I now have come to understand doing nothing is a thing, and I'm causing damage by doing nothing. So
we have to say, we just have to take the risk, and then that's why the, like, safe spaces where you can practice, you know, you can practice, you can talk. And then, when you're out in maybe not so safe spaces, you practice and, you know, say something that it'll be less damaging. And then even for those of us who, okay, if you're listening and if you're a person who is in college or high school with this conversation, we know that, you know, we want people to continue to come to the table, to learn, to be equipped, to be informed, to be engaged. And so we come alongside people. We show grace, we come alongside people and lovingly either correct or, encourage whatever, you know, needs to be done. Because it could also happen the other way. And I used to do this where I'm like, well, I know what you meant. You know, if someone says something that isn't, you know, helpful and could be hurtful, I know your heart. And that's true. But we also, you know, want to help the person not be in a predicament where they're talking to someone or in front of people who don't know her heart, doesn't know her heart, and doesn't know where she's coming from and could potentially do some damage.
Well, and that might keep that person in perpetually in preschool.
Exactly.
Yeah. Growth is exactly. The goal. Yes.
Thank you so much for agreeing to come back to this table. We're going to go ahead and wrap up for today, but we've got a whole list of questions to continue working with, and we will come back to this in part two. Thank you so much, Lucretia.
You're welcome. My pleasure. And thank you for having me. I'm so honored.
Gosh, this is so great. Awesome.
Head on over to gritandgracegirls.com/episode113.
There you'll find this week's transcript, the Digging Deeper download, Bible verse art, and directions about how to enter this week's giveaway for What Lies Between Us.
If you've enjoyed this week's episode of Grit and Grace, won't you share it with your friends? You'll find easy share buttons on the webpage for this episode.
Make sure to join us again next week for part two of our interview with Lucretia Berry.
For today, grow your grit. Embrace God's grace. And when you run across a bad rule, you know what to do. Go right on ahead and
break it.
Made a very intentional choice to do a hard thing and make that her ministry. But I also love her. I feel like I have elephants in my house. I have a 16-pound cat and
it's
a 9-pound cat. Yeah. Sounds like elephants above my head.
It did.
Yeah. Yeah. I swear Dusty's only 9 pounds, but she wears 4-inch stilettos. That is all I have to say about that cat.